C1C. Number 8B.
Here it is a change. The music now takes on another phase and something, another melody, another theme is now coming in. So we read further on line 22, and I read, finite mind. And at once I get the sense, ooh, suddenly she speaks about finiteness, and I wonder if that goes on or not, or if it's just a side remark. But I'm awake now, I'm listening. Finite mind manifests all sorts of errors and thus proves the material theory of mind in matter. And something within me says, oh yes, you see, that's what makes things finite. Mind in, that's a finitizing. Always when something is put in, and that the material theory of mind in matter to be the antipode, you say antipode or antipode? Antipode of mind. And so within me something begins to react and says, but isn't that soul as mind she's talking about? Showing that the finite is really a belief of mind in matter. And so I go on being quite aware what may be coming. Who has found finite life or love? And I get again a touch of finite life, of finite love. You see? So that life, love, whatever she would take first mind, it's always finite. So it isn't so much the tone on mind or on life or on love which is important, but the finiteness of otherwise positive ideas, huh, is under consideration. Can really that which is infinite be finitized? And so she says, and this very point of finite life or love cannot be sufficient to meet the demands of human want and woe, to still the desires, to satisfy the aspirations. Again, can you see, you could be sidetracked in this sentence by that which usually appeals much more to the human, and we actually like to read in a text what we humanly are, and we are very much touched by the human wants and woes, because that's something we like to get rid of, by stilling the desires, to satisfy the aspirations. This seems to be that which we want, but the text does not stress that. These are examples. These are examples of what? Of finiteness, of finite mind. Just saying, if you finitize mind, and you have a finite mind, then everything doesn't work anymore rightly. It cannot still your desires, it cannot take care of your human want and woe, but you could have given another 2,000 examples than that. Just to show that there is no satisfaction in finitizing anything, we lose really every satisfaction. So, did I make that clear, that we have to be careful to listen to that tone that runs through the paragraph and not to be sidetracked by the examples? See? This is interesting, because we know that every fundamental idea can then be exemplified through thousands and thousands of examples. So the examples themselves don't matter so much for seeing the structure of the thing. Yes? She goes on, and says, or you, perhaps before I say that, we could say now, as we arrive at this point, now, is really finitizing the subjects he speaks about, or is it really satisfactions he speaks about? And therefore we have to leave perhaps this question a little bit open until we go further and see how does that subject evolve further. And you see right away then that it says infinite mind. It doesn't just say mind. She doesn't say divine mind. She says infinite mind because she started that way. Finite mind was the very first term on that paragraph, and therefore now she comes to the solution. Can you see a relationship? We said meaning is relationship, not the terms. The relationship now shows that the proposition was finite mind, the solution of finite mind is infinite mind. These two are related to each other, not the desires that are not satisfied. These are effects of a fundamental proposition. So infinite mind cannot be limited. You see? Cannot be limited. This is the subject to a finite form. Again. Or mind. Or mind would lose its infinite character. Can you see? Our mind would lose its infinite character. The goal is around mind finite, mind infinite. And therefore, just as she said before, that she could say, you know, if you finitize mind, naturally you get into trouble all over the place. And so she will have to say, but if you correct that proposition with an infinite mind, then you get all the blessing you want. Instead of getting into endless difficulty, you get the blessing all you want, and therefore adds to the subject here, or mind would lose its infinite character as inexhaustible love, eternal life, omnipotent truth. See, she brings in here now quite unexpectedly those three big synonymous terms, life, truth, and love, which always show to us the form of demonstration which we get if we have a solid basis. So, love, life and truth here are not the leading subject. Can you see? We must not be sidetracked in our interpretation by love, life, truth, because they only show that if mind is not finitized, then we have the blessing of life, truth, and love. But the question is, do you finitize mind, or do you leave mind infinite? This is the great question at this point. Do you see that? That we have, when we read, you see, evaluate what is said in a paragraph and be able to evaluate, are they written linearly, where every word has the same importance, where every statement has the same importance, because there is only one linear way. See, if we sing a melody, we can only sing it in one voice. Huh? And therefore, everything we sing has is an integral part of the melody. Is that so, huh? And we can't leave out one single tone, or the melody doesn't run properly. But if we see that this text is not written in one voice, but in many voices, like that, huh? A score, then we listen what is the leading, the dominant theme, and we read the dominant theme here, finite mind, infinite mind. And we read at once vertically in it that if I have finite mind, that somewhere an instrument blows in and says, but then you get all the hell you want. And if it goes to infinite mind, another instrument says, and then you get all the blessing you can expect. Yes? So that therefore, tonality-wise, here we can say this paragraph is all about finitizing mind, which is soul as mind, and infinite mind, which is soul as mind. This is the theme, and then interjected in it are the effects of that attitude. But the effects are not the theme. Yeah? I hope I get it over. Yeah? Naturally, you can see if somebody doesn't read synchronically here, he says, well, but Mrs. Eddy talks about love and life and truth. So this paragraph must deal with love, life and truth. Mrs. Eddy says so. It's black and white. You can't deny it. You can't distort the text of Mrs. Eddy. And these are all right questions and remarks as long as we have a conception that the text is written only on one dimension, horizontally, diachronically, where every statement has equal weight. Can I put it that way? That every statement has equal weight. Whereas in an orchestra, if you have a melody that has the big weight, the melody itself, and subordinate to it are the various instruments playing their part, but their part is not the dominant weight in it. If I listen to the flute, only to the flute in a whole orchestra, I don't get the melody. You would agree to that to me, huh? You wouldn't get the melody. So if I only listen here to the side remarks, I don't get the melody of the chapter. I don't get the line of the chapter. Can you once just smile and say, and nod? I really don't know if I get it over or not. All right. And so we go on and just listen to that melody again and feel, I wonder if it changes or not. So she goes on and says, it would require an infinite form. Again, I get the sense, oh, it's still about infinite and about form. Usually form is limitation in the ordinary language. So it would require an infinite form to contain infinite mind. And at the moment, I still would have the feeling it's still the same tone, namely mind limited, mind unlimited. Indeed, the phrase infinite form involves a contradiction of terms. Again, I have infinite and form and say, yes, that actually will contradict each other because usually a form is seen as a limited outline. I go further and say, and read here, finite man. Again, I hear finite. You see, I just can't help it anymore to see all over the place finite, infinite, finite, infinite. I don't hear truth, life, love as a subject running through it. Still, finite mind cannot be the image and likeness of the infinite God. Now you have something wonderful here, you know, that we have seen that Mrs. Eddy had first explained creation as the image of mind, in mind. Then in the great dawn of spirit, she explained creation as the likeness of spirit. And if you take those two together, you have the true identity, soul. And so here she speaks about both. Usually when you have image and likeness, you have identity, because an image itself does not yet be to be the likeness. You can have a distorted image. And so in order that it is not distorted, you have spirit that always brings forth the reflected image, truly reflected, not the deflected image. So spirit will see to it that the like produces like. And the moment you have that, then what appears? Then appears the identity, the image and likeness in one, and that is the identity of the object mirrored, which is soul. So here, where we have begun to feel that she is speaking about creation from the point of view of soul, now suddenly Mrs. Eddy calls it the image and likeness of the infinite God. Why doesn't she say infinite likeness of God? See how she stresses always the same thing. Here she speaks about the infinite God. She can use all sorts of adjectives for God in the text, but she will use those adjectives in the context that are indicative for the whole tone within a subject. Here it's infinite God. A mortal, corporeal, or finite conception of God. I just can't get away again that it's all a question of finite and infinite. Cannot embrace the glories of limitless, again the tone, incorporeal life and love. Again you have a limitless concept of God. The side note there is infinite physique impossible. Again you have the infinite form of which she was speaking. That an infinite physique is impossible, therefore that the infinite can have no finite form. I read on at line 3, hence the unsatisfied human craving for something better, higher, holier than is afforded by material belief in a physical God and man. Here again you see that she is referring back to the paragraph before, because in the paragraph before she has taken those symbolism of that saying that every finitizing of the infinite will kill our satisfaction, and therefore it cannot satisfy anything. The insufficiency of this belief, what is this belief? Always when you have a relative pronoun, you have to think like this. I think it's called a relative pronoun. This, it's referring back to a statement. You have to make sure what the statement was, so that you are quite sure that you are reasoning along Mrs. Eddy's line. The insufficiency of this belief, what is that belief? And so you have to go back and see, well, it is that belief in a finite conception of God. It's not the belief that has to do with life and love. It has to do really with that finite conception of God. And therefore, this belief cannot supply the true idea. I must read the whole sentence. The insufficiency of this belief to supply the true idea proves the falsity of material belief. So here now she ends it and says that this belief of finite, of a finite conception of God can never give us really what? The true idea. The true idea. And therefore proves the falsity of that belief. So again we have a sense that the idea of the limited mind can never be reached through any finite mind. That finite mind can never define the infinite idea of infinite mind. Just taking away again the sense, don't start with finite beliefs, start out really with God and the infinite idea of the Godhead that is never in anything. I go further and I'm very curious to think, to know, is that subject still brought further? Is he still going on to say, look here, if you finitize your mind, then you don't get anywhere, you can't get the true idea, and all what you get is dissatisfaction. So I'm listening again as I go on and feel she can elaborate on that still further, or perhaps no more. So I'm at a point of expectation. Man, she says, is more than a material form. And already again I feel, yes, she's still somehow in that subject of form. Is form finite? Is form infinite? With a mind inside, again a question of the greater in the lesser, which must escape from its environment in order to be immortal. And I feel here we get quite a different subject, namely the question, how can we get out of the finite belief? How can we escape out of the finite in order to reach the infinite? And I feel already a bit of change there and say, how can that be achieved? Because you agree with me that that sentence from 9 to 11 is a sentence that is the fundamental belief of practically all mankind, that all mankind says, I have a material form with a mind inside, but how can I escape that material form in order to be immortal, to be infinite, no more bounded really by limits? It's a very tempting question that the student at the beginning likes to misinterpret and feels the very thing I have to do is to get rid of the body as quickly as possible. And that naturally is not right. See, what he has to see is first that the body does not give him limits, that he is master over the belief of body and not over body. First must master the belief that the body can keep him away from being infinite, from being the Son of God. That's the first thing he has to do. And not to neglect the body, not to give any more to the body what the body needs in its normality. The very first point, which Mr. Zeddy always brings out, that healing is actually bringing everything in the human back to the normality of mortal mind. That's in the chapter on teaching. First, to the normality of mortal mind, before we can go further. So, here is the big question raised here, and her answer is quite interesting. She says, man reflects infinity, and this reflection is the true idea of God. And somehow in one's consciousness something rings a bell and says, this is the first time now she speaks about reflection. We know that reflection has to do with spirit, that spirit brings forth the pure reflection, that in the focal point of spirit, the true image and likeness appears. And so you have, as a side note, infinities reflection, infinity soul, reflection spirit, and you have a wonderful combination of soul and spirit, which tells us that in order to free us from the belief in a material form, we should take the standpoint of spirit, which has an infinite reflection, and that is the true idea of God. So that man, no matter if we have a body or not, that man is still man, and it's the same man if we consider man as the reflection of infinity. Man reflects infinity. In consciousness we can easily establish the concept of the reflection of the infinite, no matter if we have a body, no matter if we have to eat and clothe ourselves, no matter if we have to do things and clean our house and so on. This does in no way whatever keep us away from the fact and from recognizing the fact that man is something completely different, that he reflects infinity. And this reflection is the true idea of God. So, as we have read that, we could see this is different than the two paragraphs before. Apparently, Mrs. Eddy has changed the question of soul, of infinitude, a little bit. And so we begin to see that actually, say what we have here in the epitome, that in soul as mind, she would show that infinite mind cannot be limited in a finite form, not in the form of a corporeal man, for instance. Then, therefore, as spirit, we must see that man, as the true idea, reflects infinity and not a corporeal form. And then we would have to go further, but we make here a break.